He wasn't just a voice. He was the voice, velvet smooth, thunder deep, and soaked in the suffering and sweetness of Jamaica's soul. Before Bob Marley became a global prophet, he called Dennis Brown his favorite singer. Before Lovers Rock had a name, Dennis Brown made it a movement. From trench town yards to sold-out stages in London, his voice preached love, rebellion, and Rastafari truth, all while carrying the weight of a people's pain. But behind the golden voice was a man battling personal demons, industry pressure, and a silent sickness that would claim him far too soon. This is not just a biography. It's a reckoning with sound, a tribute to the voice that shaped generations and died before his time. If you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform now, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Kingston, Jamaica, 1965. The city pulsed with energy, but beneath the surface, it was a city split in two: rich and poor, uptown and downtown, colonial residue and cultural revolution. It was also a city on the brink of a musical explosion. Ska had shaken the island. Rocksteady was taking root. Reggae was just beginning to rise from the streets like steam from cracked asphalt after rain. And in the heart of this shifting landscape, a young boy named Dennis Emmanuel Brown stepped into the studio for the first time. He was barely 8 years old, shy, baby-faced, yet brimming with a voice that could disarm cynics and stir souls. Born on February 1, 1957, into a family that loved music but lived modestly, Dennis had already begun turning heads at school concerts and community functions. But it was more than just talent. There was something spiritual in his delivery, a soul far older than his years. He grew up in the heart of Kingston, a city where sound systems ruled the streets and music was both escape and expression. Dennis absorbed everything: the gospel hymns from his church, the dusty vinyl from Studio One, the rebel shouts of local DJs, the croons of American soul giants like Sam Cooke and Nat King Cole. By age 11, he was already rehearsing with the Fab Five band and mingling with older musicians who recognized his gift. But it was his fateful encounter with Derek Harriott, a noted Jamaican producer, that led him into the studio to record what would become his debut, No Man Is an Island. The year was 1969. Inside the tight, smoky booth of Studio One, surrounded by seasoned musicians more than twice his age, Dennis closed his eyes and let it flow. No man is an island. No man stands alone. Those words, borrowed from the hymn book, landed differently in Jamaica, a land still struggling with the echoes of colonialism, independence growing pains, and racial divides. But from Dennis's lips, the message wasn't just philosophical. It was prophetic, and Jamaica listened. Clement Sir Coxone Dodd, the godfather of Studio One and a man not easily impressed, signed him immediately. This was a different kind of star. He wasn't loud like the DJs. He didn't dance or boast like the showman. Dennis Brown sang like he was whispering to your soul. His voice was sweet but strong, polished but unpretentious. And above all, it was sincere. Throughout 1969 and 1970, Dennis recorded a series of singles for Studio One, slowly building a name for himself. Created by the father, If I Follow My Heart and Make It Easy on Yourself showed a range and maturity few teenage singers anywhere in the world could match. But he wasn't just a prodigy. He was a vessel. What made Dennis Brown stand apart, even as a boy, was the emotion he poured into each note. You could hear it. The longing, the hope, the spiritual depth, the heartbreak of a generation raised in poverty but rich with dreams. His early success brought him invitations to perform at major venues across Jamaica and even the UK. By the time he was 15, he had appeared on Jamaican television, performed at government galas, and was being hailed as the future of reggae. But that future came with a price. Behind the smiles and soaring vocals was a teenager torn between worlds: childhood and fame, school books and sound systems. The industry that embraced him offered no real protection, and the more he ascended, the more he would come to see. Reggae was not just music. It was politics. It was struggle. It was power. And Dennis Brown, barely out of boyhood, was already becoming its voice. Still, at this point in his life, the weight hadn't crushed him. Not yet. He was still the boy with the golden voice, the island's secret, the child who made grown men cry with a single verse. But the streets of Kingston were about to change, and with them, so too would the sound of reggae, and the boy at its center. As the 1970s dawned, Jamaica stood at a crossroads. The country had achieved independence less than a decade earlier, but freedom came with friction. Social unrest festered beneath the tropical beauty. Political violence, gang warfare, and widespread poverty threatened to unravel the island's fragile dreams. And through the haze of uncertainty, reggae became the heartbeat of the people, their therapy, their protest, their prayer. Dennis Brown was no longer a child prodigy. He was now a young man stepping fully into his power and into a musical landscape about to explode globally. Though still a teenager, his voice carried the depth of a man who had lived 100 lives. By the early 1970s, he was not just singing songs, he was delivering sermons. Leaving Studio One in search of greater creative control, Dennis began working with some of the island's most dynamic producers. Among them was Joe Gibbs, a name that would become synonymous with Brown's classic era. The partnership was electric. Gibbs gave Dennis room to evolve, space to craft not just singles but statements, layered, melodic, poetic. And Dennis delivered in full. From this collaboration came a string of now legendary recordings, Westbound Train, Cassandra, Africa, and the defiant anthem Revolution. But it was the 1977 album, Visions of Dennis Brown, that changed everything. This wasn't just another reggae record. It was a manifesto, a deeply spiritual, roots-drenched collection that blurred the lines between prophecy and poetry. The album's cover featured a young Dennis with dreadlocks and a serene gaze, flanked by Rasta symbols and echoes of African liberation. Tracks like Words of Wisdom and Deliverance Will Come spoke not only to the soul of Jamaica, but to the broader African diaspora, echoing themes of redemption, black pride, and divine justice. In a time when the world was watching Marley, Dennis was creating his own revolution, quieter perhaps, but no less profound. Marley himself had taken notice. When asked about his favorite singer, Bob didn't hesitate. "Dennis Brown," he said. It was a moment of public anointment from reggae's reigning king. But even with Marley's blessing, Dennis Brown remained grounded. He never chased celebrity. He chased truth. While Bob Marley was the face of international reggae, Dennis became its backbone, a tireless recording artist who sometimes released 3 to 4 albums in a single year. His work ethic was unmatched, and so was his range. He could deliver a lover's rock ballad that melted hearts 1 minute, then drop a firebrand roots track that stirred revolution the next. He became a mainstay on the UK reggae charts and built a loyal following among Black British youth, especially in communities grappling with racism, police violence, and cultural alienation. In songs like Man Next Door and Love Has Found Its Way, Brown offered both a mirror and a bomb, a reminder of where they came from and the strength they carried. Meanwhile, back home in Jamaica, Dennis's presence became something like folklore. He wasn't a flashy performer, but when he graced a stage, barefoot, microphone in hand, eyes closed, time seemed to pause. His voice, rich with soul and conviction, turned dance halls into temples. But behind the growing fame was a mounting pressure. The nonstop touring, the demands from producers, the industry vultures, and the weight of carrying an entire culture's hopes on your shoulders. Dennis rarely complained, but those close to him began to notice the cracks, the fatigue, the escapism, the quiet storms behind the smile. Still, he pressed forward. Because for Dennis Brown, reggae wasn't a career, it was a calling. And at a time when the world desperately needed healing, revolution, and love, his voice rose above the noise and said, "Here I come." That line, from one of his most iconic tracks, became more than a lyric. It became a promise. To the poor. To the displaced. To the Rastafari faithful. To anyone who ever felt invisible. Dennis Brown was coming, and he was bringing redemption with him. By the late 1970s, reggae had splintered into powerful subgenres. Roots reggae carried the message of revolution and Rastafari awakening. Dub carved out space for echo and atmosphere. And then came a sound that flowed like honey over broken hearts, lover's rock. A gentler, more romantic expression of reggae's soul, it was both a sanctuary and a seduction. And no voice defined it more than Dennis Brown's. In Britain, where young Black Caribbean immigrants were finding their voices amid systemic racism and post-colonial displacement, lover's rock became more than music. It was identity. It was resistance through tenderness. And Dennis Brown was its poet-in-chief. His 1979 hit, Money in My Pocket, became a transatlantic anthem. The song was deceptively simple, a bittersweet tale of having money, but no one to spend it on. Yet the depth of feeling Dennis poured into every syllable struck a chord with listeners across class and culture. It was reggae, yes, but it was also soul, blues, and something ancient you couldn't quite name. The song reached number 14 on the UK singles chart, becoming Dennis Brown's first major international breakthrough. That success gave him leverage in the industry and introduced his sound to audiences far outside the Caribbean diaspora. But Brown wasn't chasing pop trends. His romantic catalog, tracks like How Could I Leave, Love Has Found Its Way, Should I, If I Follow My Heart, and Your Love Got a Hold on Me, revealed a deeper truth, that vulnerability was revolutionary. In a world where black men were expected to be hard, Brown gave them permission to feel, to long, to ache. He didn't just sing love songs. He bled them, and it resonated. Women adored him. Men respected him. Rastas embraced him, even as some questioned his balance between spiritual militancy and romantic ballads. But Dennis understood something that many artists didn't. Love and struggle were not opposites. They were twins born from survival. His concerts during this period were breathtaking. Backed by the Professionals or the We the People band, Dennis often took to the stage in crisp suits or dashikis, always barefoot, always humble. His charisma was quiet, his power immense. A simple good evening, my people, could send chills through a crowd of thousands. Despite his growing fame, Dennis Brown remained deeply connected to the people. He visited prisons. He performed at community centers and benefit concerts. He supported youth programs and was known to mentor upcoming artists, including a young Gregory Isaacs and Freddie McGregor, both of whom would go on to become giants in their own right. But the dual life of Dennis Brown, prophet and romantic, revolutionary and crooner, also mirrored the contradictions inside him. Offstage, the demands of fame took their toll. Endless travel, unpredictable income, and the exploitation rampant in the Jamaican music industry created waves of stress. Brown, like many of his peers, began to self-medicate, turning to ganja at first, but eventually becoming entangled in cocaine. Friends noticed the change. His once sharp punctuality faded. Some recordings became erratic. He was still delivering beauty, but behind it was pain, buried deep in the soul of the Crown Prince. And yet, even as his private life began to fracture, Dennis never stopped creating. He recorded tirelessly. Albums poured out. Foul Play, Words of Wisdom, Love Has Found Its Way, The Prophet Rides Again. Each project contained gems, even if the world was beginning to forget just how central he had been to reggae's golden age. The industry was shifting. Dancehall was rising. A new generation, Bounty Killer, Beanie Man, and later, Vybz Kartel, began commanding the attention of youth. Dennis Brown was still respected, but his romantic messages seemed out of step with the raw aggression of the 1990s. But he never changed to chase the times. He remained defiantly Dennis Brown, a voice from the heavens, a lover with the heart of a rebel, a revolutionary who wielded tenderness like a weapon. And even when his name slipped from the headlines, the people still played his music at weddings, funerals, street dances, and moments of personal grief. Because Dennis Brown didn't just make hits, he made healing. And healing, as Jamaica would soon discover, was something they would need desperately. By the early 1990s, the tides of reggae had shifted. Dancehall now thundered from the streets of Kingston with the raw, unfiltered energy of a younger generation, bold, brash, and lyrically militant. The sound was evolving, but at its core still echoed the soul that Dennis Brown had helped define. He was no longer the rising star. He was the elder, the legend. The man who once opened shows for Bob Marley was now being referenced as foundation by youths barely born when No Man Is an Island first touched the airwaves. But Dennis Brown never seemed to chase the spotlight. He didn't need to. He had become something deeper, an eternal presence in the soundtrack of the Caribbean spirit. In the face of industry changes, Dennis remained productive, recording multiple albums and touring extensively in the US, Europe, and Africa. His performances, though at times less sharp due to health and personal battles, still possessed an undeniable gravity. When Dennis stepped on stage, even weakened, the crowd leaned in. His voice, weathered by time and tribulation, carried new layers, the cracks now part of the beauty. But behind the scenes, a quiet war raged inside him. Dennis had become deeply addicted to cocaine. Those closest to him, fellow musicians, family, friends, tried to intervene. There were attempts at rehabilitation. There were moments of clarity, of return. But the stress of constant travel, the financial exploitation by record labels, and his own unwillingness to confront the root of his pain made the cycle hard to break. And yet, even in the depths of this struggle, Dennis never stopped creating. He released albums like Overproof, Light My Fire, and Bless Me Jah. His music now often blurred the line between love song and spiritual cry, as if he were reaching for redemption through every verse. He began spending more time with his children. He was particularly proud of his son, Dennis Emmanuel Brown Jr., and others in his musical family tree who showed interest in carrying on the legacy. To them, he offered wisdom born from wounds. In the late 1990s, Dennis experienced what many believed was a spiritual renewal. He spoke more openly about Rastafari love and the need for peace within the Black community. At concerts, he would pause to address the youth, urging them to live clean, think deeply, and stay connected to truth. There was an urgency in his tone now, as if he knew time was running out. In 1999, Dennis Brown fell gravely ill while in the U.S. on tour. He returned to Jamaica and was admitted to the University Hospital of the West Indies in Kingston. The official cause of death was cardiac arrest, brought on by complications from pneumonia. But those close to him knew it was more than that. It was years of quiet suffering, of unhealed wounds masked by melody. He died on July 1, 1999. He was only 42 years old. The news sent shockwaves across the reggae world. Jamaica went silent. Dancehall paused. Radios flooded the air with his music. Grown men wept openly. Women sang his love songs like hymns. DJs from Kingston to Brixton to Harlem told stories of what Dennis had meant to them. The Jamaican government, recognizing the depth of his contribution, granted him a state funeral, a rare and solemn honor. Thousands lined the streets. Rastas wrapped in red, gold, and green walked side by side with British Jamaicans, inner-city youth, music industry veterans, and mourning elders. As the coffin was lowered, a small group of schoolchildren sang. No man is an island, no man stands alone. It was the song that started it all. The boy who once sang it with wide eyes and bare feet was now being returned to the soil he had loved, with a voice that would never be silenced. But even in death, Dennis Brown wasn't gone. Not really. His influence could be felt in the falsetto runs of Barris Hammond, the poetic phrasing of Chronics, the spirit behind the Roots revival movement. His songs, now etched into vinyl, cassette, CD, and memory, continued to play at weddings, wakes, street dances, and Sunday mornings in Caribbean households worldwide. Dennis Brown was not just a singer. He was the soul of a people, a reminder that to suffer and to sing are sometimes the same thing, that love is as revolutionary as rebellion, and that even the softest voice can shake the hardest world. He lived like a whisper of grace in a storm of struggle. And when he sang, it wasn't just a performance, it was a prayer. The crown prince had fallen. But his music still rose. Long after the music fades, long after the lights dim and the fans go home, what remains is the echo, the resonance of a voice that refused to be forgotten. In the case of Dennis Brown, that echo became immortal. In the years following his passing, the world began to truly reckon with what had been lost. Music critics re-examined his catalog. Young artists unearthed his records and found themselves transformed. Tributes poured in from every corner of the reggae universe, not as empty flattery, but as sacred acknowledgement of a man who had laid the foundation while asking for no crown. And yet, he had always been royalty. Dennis Brown's influence became even more evident in the rise of the Roots revival movement of the 2000s and 2010s. Artists like Chronics, Protoge, Ja 9, Jesse Royal, and Kabaka Pyramid began channeling the same balance of love and resistance that Dennis had perfected decades earlier. Many openly named him as a guiding spirit. In sound systems across Kingston, DJs kept his tracks alive, blending his voice into modern rhythms. Not to modernize him, but to remind new generations where the sound was born. His music found new life in dub plates, remixes, and reverent samples. The classic line, "Here I come," became a chant of heritage. But Dennis Brown's reach extended beyond reggae. In the UK, the lovers rock scene he helped inspire became a subject of academic study, documentaries, and films. In Africa, his spiritual anthems found welcome ears in Rastafarian enclaves and Pan-African movements. In the United States, hip-hop producers mined his catalog for timeless loops, recognizing the soul woven into every note. And in Jamaica, he became folklore. Schools began including his life in cultural studies. Street murals immortalized his face beside Marley and Tosh. Elder singers spoke of him in soft tones, as if recalling a prophet. And every year on his birthday, tributes would flood the radio waves, a chorus of gratitude from the island that birthed him. His family, too, carried the torch. His children, some biological, others musical, continued to speak his name in lyrics and interviews. The Brown name became more than lineage. It became a legacy. In 2011, the government of Jamaica posthumously awarded Dennis Brown the Order of Distinction in the rank of Commander, CD, finally offering institutional honor to the man whose music had ministered to the nation's soul for over three decades. But perhaps the most powerful tribute came not from a stage or a headline, but from the people. From the vendors in Coronation Market who still hum, "Love Has Found Its Way." From the mothers who play, "How Could I Leave?" at family reunions. From the young lovers slow dancing under zinc rooftops to "Should I?" From the lonely teenager in Brixton who hears "Revolution" and suddenly feels seen. These are the places Dennis Brown still lives. He lives in vinyl scratches and Bluetooth speakers, in church choirs and dance hall samples, in dreadlocks and wedding gowns, in tears and laughter, in silence and in sound. He lives not because he sought fame, but because he gave everything to the music. He sang until his heart broke. He loved until it hurt. He believed in people, in truth, in the divine power of song. And so, even as reggae evolves, one voice will always rise, pure, smooth, and unstoppable. The crown prince who sang the people's pain still sings.